got to being born on the small holding. I moved from the small holding to Ifton Hill Camp. Which was...
Right, so you moved from the small... You moved from the small holding when you were two?
Yes.
So then?
Yes. So there was no housing. You know, my grandparents were given notice to quit because they weren't making it pay. Very difficult in wartime to have made it pay. And so they had to find accommodation, which the only thing available was the old army camp that had been vacated after the war, which was only a little way along the road. And of course, both my dad and my granddad had to find a job, and they found jobs on the railway based at Seven Tunnel Junction. And so we moved into a Nissen hut, and that's where my sister was born in 1949. And then a short while there, and we moved into a wooden hut, which was an officer's hut, which it had its own toilet adjoining it. So we didn't any longer have to walk down to the toilet block down the end of the camp, which was quite a luxury.
So how many rooms would be in this hut then?
Well, you stepped from outside into quite a big room. And my dad put up a corrugated tin partition across it with a door in it to make the living room smaller, and also because he hoped to be able to start a little shop in the camp. He's trying to be an entrepreneur, but the council wouldn't let him do it. So in the hut he did have boxes of things like chocolate bars and shoelaces and all sorts of bits and pieces that people would come and say, have you got any of this, you know? So he quite enjoyed doing that. But that room was nothing really, just an enormous hallway. So there was the living room. Then there was a long corridor down to the room at the far end, which was used as a kitchen, which again was a very big room. I don't remember it very well. I know there was no cooker. If my mother cooked, it had to be on primer stoves. But I don't remember what really was in there, because we just lived in the living room bit. You know, the dining table was there, and the radio and the sofa and the sideboard. And then in between were two bedrooms off the corridor. So my sister and I had one, and Mum and Dad had the other.
Was it warm? Do you remember feeling cold?
No, yes, chilblains. Yes, it wasn't warm, no, in a hut. We had a blacklead grate, so the fire had to be lit behind the grill every day, and there was a big blackleaded oven at the side of it, which you could bake in. I don't know if my mother ever did. It was quite primitive living, really, but I didn't know any different, so I was perfectly happy. My sister did push me. We had to bath in a tin bath in front of this fireplace, and my mother had the bath out, and I'd got out of the bath. My sister was ready to get in, and she shoved me for some reason, and I sat on the fire, on the black-leaded thing. So I had a most terrible burn on my bottom and the top of my leg. So I know I had to go to hospital and have it dressed and all sorts of things. And that's not so easy in those days, because nobody had a car, you know, to take you to a hospital.
Where was the hospital?
The hospital was the Cottage Hospital in Chepstow. And I think... I'm not sure whether the museum is there now.
It's become the museum. Yeah.
And that used to be the hospital. And I was in there when I was 3 or 4 to have my tonsils out. And, I remember my mother took me in, and I had my own nightie on. I had the operation in my nightie. And when she came to fetch me a week later, no visitors allowed, because I was a child and it would upset me. So I was in a week, and when she came in, I still had this bloody nightie on from where they take the tonsils out. But I do remember being on a ladies' ward, and there was one very nice old lady that looked after me, and she gave me a big bag of quality-type sweets, which was a great luxury when I went home. And I remember another lady in one of the corner beds, and she was shrieking for the nurse all the time, which I didn't quite understand what was going on, you know. Yeah. It didn't seem to do me any harm.
How long did you actually live in these huts? And you remember?
Till I was 7.
You were 7.
Yes, so we'd moved there in 48. My sister was born in 49. We moved to Caldecott in 54. And that's when the houses were built in Caldecott and Portskewet. And I think we could choose which place we went to, but Dad chose Caldecott because it was near a Seven Tunnel Junction and he used to ride his bike to work, so it was a quicker journey.
Yes. Where did you go to school then once you came to Caldecott?
Obviously I went to Portskewet school when we were at the camp and I had to go on the bus to that with all the other children. Right. It was too far to walk. And then when we moved to Caldecott, my first school was Church Road School, which was the only school in Caldecott then. But I wasn't there very long because that was April 54. The following year, I think, I'm pretty certain, that in 1955, the Green Lane School was open because I have a photo of the school class of 1955 taken there. I was looking at the other day, so yes, so it must have been opened by 55. That, of course, is now gone and a brand new one in its place. But we were the first wave, and that became junior then, and the old Church Road School became infants.
Right.
And but there were no other schools until the comprehensive was built, because children from here went to Rogget for secondary education or Larkfield for grammar school.
And you went to?
I went to Larkfield, yes.
Yeah. So you've seen quite a lot of changes, really.
Huge amount of changes, yes. It's changed from a fairly small village into not a large town, but a small town with a lot of housing.
Yeah.
Huge, huge housing estates. Because
do you remember the impact? Do you remember your parents talking about it? Of the changes that were coming with the...
Not really, because I think it all developed so gradually.
Right.
When we moved into Longcroft Road, Kyamare Road was still being finished off. You know, the houses were there, but they were still being finished. Where the clinic is in Kyamare Road, that was the centre for the builders to put all their building stores, so it had wrought iron railings all around it, and they kept all the building materials and stuff in there while they were building the rest of the houses. So we really were the first wave of newcomers to Caldecott, and so we were, a lot of the photos in this Photos of Old Caldecott book, I remember that, you know, it still was very much a rural place, a village. Where Margaret's Way is was a field with a big pond in, and we used to go and catch tadpoles and frog spawn in that. Dewstow, we used to go and explore the quarry. Well, I'm not quite sure how that's all worked out, where what was, but I mean, there's all houses there now anyway. Yeah.
So do you remember anything about the schools, you know, what they were like? Did you have blackboards? Did you have... pen and ink, you know, any of those details?
Yeah, I think when I was in junior school, I think each desk had an inkwell in it and we had the pen you dipped in the inkwell. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and blackboards and chalk, yes. We had a one teacher that I thought was really good fun and always made jokes with him and all the rest of it. And one day I drew his picture on the board and put Mr. Hodges, which wasn't like me because I was a very good little girl. And he made me stand on the chair with my hands on my head after school. So all the kids told my mother, Mary's having to stand on the chair with her hands on her head. And she thought it was hilarious. She thought it was really funny because, you know, I never usually put a foot wrong. Yeah. So he wasn't amused at that, so that taught me a lesson. Yeah.
Do you remember any activities in the school? Did you have... obviously you had the reading, writing and arithmetic.
Yes.
Like we all did.
We did a lot of... By the time I was there, we did a lot of practice for the 11 plus. Lots of intelligence tests and English tests and mental arithmetic, and we did those a lot so that by the time you got to the 11 plus you were well versed in what you had to do. I remember concerts because I remember doing choral speaking when I was in the top class, I think, and we had to say Hilaire Belloc's There Was a Boy Whose Name Was Jim, about Jim being eaten by the lion. And I still remember that to this day. I've often said it at different things. And that was when I was 10 or 11. Yeah, so that was nice. And of course we had sports days. And
where were the sports
held? Just in the school. I remember being in the sack race, and I remember being in the thread the needle race. The trouble was I was really good in all the heats, but when it came to the actual day, everything went wrong. I think I was probably last in everything. I'm not really a sporty person. Better at gymnastics.
So you passed 11 plus.
I passed the 11 plus, yeah.
And went to Larkfield. How did you get there from Caldicott?
On the bus, the ordinary service bus, yes. We were issued with season tickets by the County Council. And I guess there were maybe a dozen of us from Caldicott.
Did you start noticing sort of changes in the village by then? You know, transport was improving, or perhaps maybe your father had a car or something?
No, we never had a car really. My dad did buy a car, which looked a bit like a hearse. He bought it for £10. It was a really ancient thing, but he wanted to learn to drive on it. But wherever he went, we mostly ended pushing it back, you know. So he had to take some passengers in order for it to be pushed back afterwards. And he used to keep it on the green down opposite our house. And he'd sit in and practice changing gears and things. So that was quite a joke for a while. But he did pass his test eventually. And Mum and Dad belonged to the Civil Defence in the 60s. And they used to drive ambulances on exercise. And, well, Mum didn't drive an ambulance, but Dad did, and my aunt. Mm.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of music. One of the ladies we've spoken to talked about cattle being driven through the centre of Caldicott.
That isn't something I remember, whether that was before my time, but I don't remember that. What I remember going through Caldicott is the shale lorries for the steelworks being built. And of course, the steelworks was responsible for a bigger increase in housing again, and we had lots of people from the valleys. And some of the friends I have that I've known since I was, you know, in the 60s are still here, but they first came from Ebervale, of that area, with the steelworks. But there was a lot of complaints about the shale lorries, because Caldicott was still a village, and, you know, all this going through was very dangerous. And when you think what we have now, you know, it was quite mild, really. Mm. Nothing like the great big lorries we get now.
Yeah.
They're so enormous.
So I wonder where those shale lorries were coming from. Do you know?
No, I'm not sure. I tend to think of them, well, no, they'd have had to go both ways, weren't they? They were going in a Chepstow direction.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure whether there was anything that way that they
picked. It does suggest quarries on
Chepstow
side, doesn't
it?
I mean, they also...
Because had they been going Newport way, of course, they wouldn't have through Caldicott anyway, so it has to be that way. And we didn't have, have the bypass road then, so they'd have had to go right through the village, because none of Jubilee Way and all those weren't built, and they weren't the quality or the size of the roads that they are now. They were much more lanes.
And sort of changing in demographics, in a way, the accents change, don't they?
Yes.
You hear the Welsh.
Yes, a bit more Welsh in it. My accent, people have often been puzzled by it, because it's got a touch of Bristol, a touch of Gloucester, and a touch of Welsh.
Yeah.
So it's probably just a Monmouthshire accent.
And English was taught at school, just English?
Yes, I never spoke Welsh. I think my dad's granny used to speak Welsh. He said if she wasn't speaking Welsh, she was speaking in tongues, because she was a spiritualist, but he thinks it was Welsh. She lived in Pontypool. So presumably she was a Welsh speaker. But
let's grow you up then. You go to Larkfield.
I was going to say, we did about the games last time, didn't we? The sort of children's games.
Yes.
And the entertainment we did. And I said we did hopscotch and just drew on the road, because there wasn't much cars going by then, so we didn't get much interrupted. And of course the skipping ropes were an important part, or doing things with a ball, throwing a ball about, hide and seek. But we also had the Saturday cinema in the YMCA hut on Church Road. And that was run by the North family, who were very devout Pentecostals. Okay, so they used to put on these cinema shows on a Saturday. I think it might have been sixpence to go in. And I saw all sorts of, you know, really good films. And it had the seating, but the back few rows were bus seats. And all the courting couples sat on the bus seats at the back. So I always aspired to get into these bus seats. And when I was engaged years later, my fiancé and I went to see South Pacific in that cinema, and we sat in the bus seats at the back. So I didn't get there in the end. But Mr. North, he'd say, now there'll be a free iced lolly next week if you bring a friend. Or bring a friend and you'll get free iced lollies. The Walls iced lollies that were sort of triangular shaped. Do you remember those long triangle things? And then in the interval between the films, they'd have us singing choruses. So we'd be singing J-O-Y, J-O-Y, surely it must mean Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. And all these kids would be singing away, and they'd put the words up on the screen. So really, it was a great outreach into the community for the church. But nobody seemed to mind nowadays. They'd probably get lynched, but or forbidden to do it at the very least.
How much did that cost?
I think it was sixpence to go in, because I used to get a shilling a week pocket money, which of course is 5 pence now. So if I went to the cinema, it was a bit extravagant, because I'd pay sixpence to go in, and then I'd get some sweets for threepence, and then I'd have threepence left for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
Penny chews. Yeah, that's right, yeah. We used to go into Mrs. Daly's sweet shop on the cross, because the cross then was a big roundabout, Caldecott Cross. And Daly's had a little cottage on the corner. The first you would come to on your left as you look at Newport Road. And it had like a stable door to it. So when she opened the shop, she'd just open the top half. Now, if she heard the bell go, she'd come out of her parlour to serve us, and she got very impatient if you were too long choosing, so we used to sort of hang over this door seeing what she had on offer. Sorry,
that's right.
To see you know what was going on.
So do you remember any of the films that you saw in that?
I remember seeing Houdini. That made a big impression on me, because he got drowned in the end when he couldn't get out of his trappings. So I remember that. I remember lots and lots of cowboy films. And I remember one where a cowboy had been scalped, and he had this bright red head, and he'd been tied to his horse and came back. I don't know what film it was, but it made a big impression on me because it was a bit horrible. But I can't think what else I saw other than in South Pacific when I was much older.
So do you think, did you do any outings, you know? I mean, you went on holiday with your parents? And
yes, because Dad worked on the railway, we used to get free passes. So I know we went over to Ireland on the ship the one day, crossed over there. We didn't have cabins, we slept overnight in the hallway, whatever it is, the lounge. So we'd enjoyed that, I think. Went to Belfast. And we went up to Aberdeen and stayed with bed and breakfast with a Mrs. Berry as the landlady. What I do remember about a lot of holidays was it was often raining, but I think that is so if you holiday in Britain. We went to Newquay and Ilfracombe quite a bit. And I remember my sister, she was only a baby really, and we were in the sun. It was a lovely sunny holiday, which was probably why my parents weren't armed for it. And Margaret got a blister on her back, which was, it was like a cushion. It was all blister, terrible. So they took her to the doctor, and he really wiped the floor with my parents, being so careless that, you know, they let her get in that state. I think that was Ilfracombe, and we used to camp in a tent when we went there. And then my grandparents moved to London, where my granddad became a ticket collector. And we used to have holidays with them in London then, which was wonderful. My mother would put me on in Newport, and my gran would meet us in London. And that was quite an adventure.
So Cardicott wasn't just your complete world then?
No, that's right. No, I think with Dad having these free passes, we did go to a lot of different places, usually only for a week at a time. We went up to New Brighton, you know, saw something of Liverpool, and yeah. So we did very well, really.
Right.
Can I ask about when you went to the secondary school, to the grammar school, Larkfield? Did you study Welsh? Was that part of the curriculum?
No, it wasn't then. It wasn't until the Welsh Language Act. I think, I don't know whether that was after the referendum or whether it was when we became the new counties in 1996, that then the Act was passed that Welsh had to be taught in all of Monmouthshire schools. And Chepstow and Monmouth both tried to opt out, and they wouldn't let them because they said they were so anglicised and a lot of their pupils came from over the border. But no, they have to teach it. And of course we've got more Welsh medium schools now anyway, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were the subjects that you did do that you remember?
Well, English language and literature, French, Latin. Well, I think I might have started Latin in the second year. History and geography and general science. Maths, of course. PE and games and needlework and cookery. And then that changed as you went through the school. I started to do, I think in the second year you could do Latin or cookery, and I chose Latin. And then it was physics, art or needlework when you got to the third form, something like that, and I chose needlework to do for GCE. And the sciences, I chose geology. So I never really did chemistry or physics or biology as separate subjects, only in the general sciences. And then when I got to A-levels, I did English, French and history.
So they were the subjects you liked the best, or you thought you would...
That was what I liked. That was my scene.
Yeah.
And did you went to college after that, didn't you?
Well, I had applied to university. I had been wondering about the library, you know, whether I would go and be a librarian. I didn't get my grades as high as I should have done for my first choice, and I decided not to go to clearing. I passed the three, but not the grades I should have got. So I decided, that made up my mind, I was going to go to library school instead. So I worked for a year, and then went to Loughborough for 2 years.
And that's where you trained to be a librarian?
I trained to be a librarian. And then, not long after that, they made it a degree course. So I did an Open University degree in the 80s to sort of keep my qualifications abreast. And also it was nice for my mum and dad, because all through school, my teachers had said, oh, Mary will go to university. You know, yeah, she's all right, she'll go to university. And I didn't, and I felt disappointed for them. So, you know, when I did get my Open University degree, they came down to the graduation and had a photo of me at last.
So you did your degree, your Open University degree, as a mature student then?
Yes.
Were you married by that?
Oh, yes, the children were. When I was doing it, Catherine was 5 or 6, because I know she had to do something for school at home, and she had to watch something on the telly, and she said, I'm going to be mummy doing her city, because I used to have to watch television programmes for her, you see. She's going to be mummy doing her city.
And what subjects did you cover in your Open University degree?
Well, I did a humanities degree, so it was arts foundation course, And then on the second levels, I did Renaissance and Reformation and 17th century England, a changing culture. So that embraced all the humanities, religion, music, art, literature, philosophy and psychology was some of it as well. Very, very interesting. I mean, aside from getting a degree at the end of it, I really, really enjoyed the learning experience. And then for third level, that's for the honours degree, I did the 19th century novel and its legacy. And then I did a half a credit on Shakespeare plays and a half a credit on 20th century poetry. So, yeah, so I really enjoyed that, and I got a 2-1 at the end of it.
So could you tell us something about the process, the way it worked, what learning material was you had access to, and how the assessment was carried out and so on?
Yes, you enrolled for which course you wanted to do, and my first year was at Newport in, I think it was Altarine Tech.
Oh, yes.
And I had a tutor called Margaret Nicholas who saw me through the foundation course, and there was another group with a Mrs. Barker, but I was in Margaret Nicholas's group, and then she remained my counsellor throughout all the years I did. So if I had any problems or queries, I could go to her. After that, the courses were held in Cardiff University, and there was a friend of mine was also doing it, so we used to go to some of them together, and she would drive down. Books, I bought a lot of my own, and you also had to pay. It wasn't a huge fee, but you did have to pay for doing the course. So we did manage that. And we had summer schools, and I went for the foundation course, I went to Bath University for a week, which was lovely. And for one of the others, I went to York. So I must only have done two. But went to York University, which again was great, because you had that college environment and you stayed in the halls of residence.
Were you working at the same time as you were training then? Were you working in the library by that time?
I was doing supply at first, so that was just as they needed me. Mm. I think I started to work for the last bit. I started work part-time in 82, and I was still doing it then. And I started full-time in Caldecott in 1984. So
tell us about the evolution of Caldecott Library then, how it developed.
Well, as I said, I moved to Caldecott when I was 7. And when I was about, I was always a very avid reader. And books were scarce. You may get a few from school and a few for presents and a few passed on by the family. But there was never enough to satisfy me, really, in the way of books. I loved reading. So one day when I was about 9, a friend said to me, you know, you can go down to the parish hall in Caldecott and you can get books and you can take them home and read them. And when you finish them, you can take them back and get some more. And it doesn't cost anything. Well, that sounded much too good to be true. So off I went post haste to the luck to find out what was going on in the parish hall. And the parish hall was a wooden hut in Church Road. And just inside the parish hall, they've got this desk and bookcases and a lady called Mrs. Harrison. And I discovered it was this thing called a public library had opened. And I had never heard of public libraries. I'd lived all my life in a very rural situation and I'd never heard of them. So this was a new thing for me, but I was very enthusiastic, took home my card and got it signed, had my 2 pink tickets, and I was one of Caldecott Library's earliest and most enthusiastic customers. And I still go to Caldecott Library 60-something years later. That's all changed, of course, now. The library then had to have wire cages screwed on the front, because it was a public hall and all sorts of people used it, so the books had to be safeguarded. And the library desk was a writing bureau that was brought out, the top brought down and the resting on the doors beneath, and all the rows of tickets brought out, because we had what was called the Brown issue system, and all the tickets had to be filed in order for when you brought the books back. That was only there for a year or two before it moved to the new Caldecott College, which is a comprehensive school really, but we always called it Caldecott College because all the evening classes were held there then.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in a public room within mm-hmm. Caldecott College. Mm-hmm. Beautiful library there, nice little room, and it had plenty of windows with curtains, which after the parish hall was wonderful. Lots more books, and a coffee table with armchairs. Those plastic armchairs with very jazzy patterns, and when you sit on them, the cushions go. Yeah, but I did think it was absolutely wonderful. As I say, it's my first experience of public libraries anyway. I'd never been in another one. And I said to my mum, oh, I'd love to work over there with Mrs. Harrison. It's really lovely. But it went on the back burner, and I thought I'd change my mind and be a teacher. But in the event, things conspired that I became a librarian after all. And I've always been happy doing that. Mm. And of course then, after a few years in the school, the porter cabin was put there and the library had its own premises at last, which saw all sorts of fire and flood and rabbits underneath and all sorts of things.
So what year was that round about?
What year did it go?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. While I was in school, that porter cabin was open, and I left school in 64, so you know, between after about 1960,
yeah.
Certainly, possibly a
yeah.
bit before.
And it stayed there until?
Well, you see, in 1964 I started working for the library service, and Caldecott's new library was on the 5-year plan. The plans were drawn, and it was going to incorporate the sort of one-stop shop offices, which at that time would have been Monmouthshire County Council, working side by side with Gwent County Council. But it never happened until 1996. Caldecott Library was eventually opened. Monmouth Borough had got fed up with waiting and had built the one-stop shop bit separately, their offices separately. But then it's sort of next door. But it was originally all going to be one building. And so, yeah, so it was quite a privilege to be part of, you know, seeing the new library go up.
Who opened it? Was there a big sort of to-do when it was opened?
There must have been, but I don't remember very well now what went on with that. I do remember a local MP coming and having a look round, because my husband was chaplain to the mayor one year, and I was at a council dinner and sat next to this MP, and he said to me, I was telling him about the library, and he said, I'd love to see around it. And I said, I'll come any time. Well, his secretary had, you know, arranged, and of course all the councillors were there, the chief librarian, nobody told me he was coming. But one of the staff said, Mary, do you know we've got an MP coming to look round? You might have to censor this. So I made sure I was in Caldecott working that day, you know. So they were all showing him all round and all of this, you know, and I kept in the background. And when he went to go, he came over to me and he said, well, I've really enjoyed going round. He said, thank you so much for asking me, for inviting me. So when he'd gone, Carol said to me, that Carol worked in the library, and she said, who's got all the brownie points then?
So how many librarians were working in Monmouthshire at the time that you were a librarian?
At the time I left, we had quite a lot, because we had a professional librarian, a qualified librarian, in each of the four main libraries. We had my job, which was resources manager, we had an IT and information officer, and we had a reader development and children's librarian. So that was seven. And then the principal librarian, that was eight. So we had at least eight qualified librarians.
Interesting.
But some of them were qualified without being in those positions as well. Because, I know Anne Thomas was, for example, but she was just having a job as a library assistant in Monmouth at that time. Yeah.
True, but she was a chartered librarian.
Anne was, yes, and she had my job after I'd left.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. Yeah, but we're getting much further on now. This is like the 90s, and 2000.
Could you talk about when your family was young, and what it was like in the home, and the experience, I suppose, of looking after the family, and what facilities you had to do it, you know, cooking facilities, washing facilities, and domestic things.
Right. Well, I lived in Shakespeare Drive when we first house we bought was in Shakespeare Drive, number one. And it was a nice little semi-detached house. We had a lounge, a small kitchen, small dining room. And we had the mod cons, really. It was a twin tub washing machine that you had to drag out and fill up, you know, ready for doing the washing. I had a gas cooker, we had a fridge. And we did actually, a few years afterwards, buy a freezer which was in the garage. Didn't so much see the fridge freezers then that we do now, but we had a chest freezer in the garage. We had a television. And when my husband's auntie died, we had some money from her and we bought a coloured television with it. Just at the time Princess Anne was getting married, which was 1973, because my son was a few months old and I remember having to change his nappy while I was watching this wedding. Yeah.
So you had far more
things to help
with the domestic work than your mother would have had.
We did have central heating, but we did have a coal fire as well.
Mm.
But yes, it wasn't difficult, really.
Such a change, really.
Yeah.
And shopping, you know, everyday shopping, food and meat and bread and so on.
Yes, well, we had the first supermarket open in Caldecott, which was Key Markets, which is where Store 21 is now. And my sister and brother-in-law, he worked for Key Markets, so he had a flat above. So they lived up there for a bit.
Is that when that row of shops were built then, at that time?
They were built, I think, in the 70s, because I was married the first time in 1967. And it was still the old road then, the road right through, and a lot of the old houses of the road were still there. But yeah, we had the doctor's clinic. The doctor's surgery was where the health clinic now is in Kymore Road, but that was the doctor's surgery then. There were a few doctors there that you could go and see. I remember there was a family planning clinic and various other things as well. But Grey Hill surgery wasn't built then. And of course, when I was a little girl, the doctor's surgery was at Deep Weir, where the Deep Weir Motel is now, with the barrow in the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
And we used to have to walk down Sandy Lane, which was still a lane then, to visit the doctor.
Yeah.
And that was Dr. Strong. And I think he took on a partner called Dr. Walford Davis, who was a very young man then. And Mrs. Strong would welcome you in and sit you in her lounge, you know, all plenty of chairs there, and you took your turn at nice French windows onto the garden in the summer. And then the one Christmas as a little girl, I had a carbuncle on my hand, and it was very, very painful, and I'd been upset all Christmas Day, and Dad took me down on Boxing Day to have it lanced, and Dr. Strong sorted it out. And they were never upset or put out or anything like that about you going. you know, they very much took their service to the community seriously, as far as I could tell as a child. But
yeah,
certainly, you know, there wasn't any problem with me interrupting their Boxing Day. So,
it's a different life.
It, very different. Absolutely. Then. My childhood, very different from my children's childhood.
Yes.
And the whole poverty situation, really, because my parents never well off when we were growing up. And my dad never lost that all his life. He actually, by the time he went into care in Cherry Tree, he had much more money than Joe and I have got. but he wouldn't ever spend it, you see. And I think it's because he never really learned how to spend money, because it was always so tight.
So how old was your father when he ended and went to Cherry Tree?
He was 88 when he went into Cherry Tree, and he had dementia, and he'd had dementia for some time, so it was beginning to be too much of a struggle to cope with.
Had your mother passed away?
Yes, yes. I think partly he struggled to look after her. She had multi-infarct dementia and was ill for some years. He wouldn't have any help of any sort. Very stubborn, but I think he really wore himself out looking after her, and so that didn't do him any good. So I think all the stress of that wouldn't have helped the dementia side of him.
For the listener, Cherry Tree is just across.
Cherry Tree is across from where I live now. Yes, on Newport Road, and it is a care home. And yes, they, you know, we thought they wouldn't accept people with dementia, but as long as they weren't aggressive and needed really, you know, because sometimes it can be very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dad was always meek as a lamb, so it was all right.
I'm just trying to think. There's one question here. Popular fashions, hairstyle or clothes, your favourite song. Do you remember as you sort of grew up, you know, like Elvis Presley or something like that?
Well, I was a big Cliff Richard fan. Anything that Cliff Richard sang was wonderful. I still like Cliff Richard now, say what they might about him. The great geriatric pop singer. I was very indignant when they had all the accusations against him. But I wasn't very keen on Elvis when I was a teenager. I thought he was sulky, but I've learned to appreciate him since. So I quite like Elvis's music now. And of course, the Beatles were around when I was young. So I was 17 when they were singing She Was Just 17, you know.
Where did you go for dances and things like that?
Dances, we went over the school, the community college, because all the dances were held there, the discos. And that was a big Saturday night thing. And fashion-wise, I didn't have a lot of clothes. I certainly didn't have a lot of going-out clothes. And I used to wear a brown pleated skirt with either a turquoise satin blouse or borrow my sister's lemon satin blouse. And I had a black and red skirt, which I used to wear a black polo neck jumper with. But there wasn't a lot of variety. I just used to, you know, different ones, different weeks to try and bring the changes, because we had school uniform for school, and you know, it was just.
Did you have a Saturday job or anything like that?
No. There never really was anything to be had, I don't think. And my mother never worked. Everything she did seemed to be voluntary. She would have, because money was scarce, so I think she would have, particularly as we grew older. But mothers didn't work the same then. When I went back to work in the library, I mean, first of all, I did supply when Mark started school. But that was just so long as I could go in, I could say no. But when I had the opportunity of the part-time job in Chepstow, which was 1982, Mark would have been 9 or 10 then, top juniors anyway. And I said to the children, look, I've been offered this job, but it would be Thursday, Friday and Saturday morning. So it means you'd have to stay with your dad Saturday mornings. I wouldn't be around. Oh, they thought it was great if I'd be earning money. Oh, yeah, go, take it. We'd have the money. So at that age, they were looking at the finances. I'm not sure that I would have even thought of that when I was a child, but they were onto it. Yeah, you go and work, Mum, bring the money home. So they were quite happy for me to go to work. So I did
for a couple of years, and then I went full-time.
Yes.
In Caldecott. That was good because Mark was they were both at Caldecott Comprehensive School, and I was in the school grounds in the library, so if I was needed, I was handy. And Mark thought it was great to tell all his friends that his mother was in charge of the library, until when they had any fines, they went and complained to him, "Your mother charged me fines." So he stopped telling anybody I was his mother. Then I got disowned.
What about the introduction of computerisation and other technologies into the library service? When did you begin to see those changes coming
about?
In the
1990s, that was. I was working in Chepstow Library. As a county council, as Gwent Libraries, we had done a trial run at Ebervale. Ebervale was the first library to go live online. And once that was done, they went round the other libraries then, because all the stock for each library had to be input before you could do anything else. And so I remember for a little while in the early 90s, we had the team and their computers putting all of our stock, cataloguing all of our stock onto the computer. Once that was done, we had the job in Chepstow of inputting all the borrower's register, all the registration forms. So that took a little while, and each one of course had to be issued with a computer card as we did it. So I've got the old black and white one that I still use, which was one of the first original cards we had for Chepstow. And then in 93 we were moving up to the new Chepstow Library, and that is when we went live with the books. You know, we'd got the customer's register and the catalogue ready, but we hadn't used it for issuing. So, of course, with cataloguing them all, they all had to be issued with barcodes as well. And so we all had to operate. And we had Steve, who was our computer, in charge of the computers in County Hall, he came and spent a few weeks with us to make sure all went well. Everybody had to get the European Computer Driving Licence, all the staff, so we all were sent on a course, which was rather nice because that was free then, wasn't it? We learned how to use computers, all the different sorts, you know, spreadsheets and PowerPoint and all the different things, publisher.
I mean, you can see the changing role of libraries. You, as a librarian, would have seen it very much so.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, the Public Libraries Act was 1964, saying that all authorities had, it was compulsory for all authorities to provide a public library service. That hasn't altered, but the library is now continually trying to rediscover itself, rediscover its role, really, because so many places have books. There's all the charity shops, there's the e-books, all sorts of other ways of getting hold of them. And there are even some, not exactly private enterprises, but there's somewhere in Newport, for example, they've taken over a shop and there's free books. And if you've got any to give, you can give them. And if you want to take any, you can take them. You know, so it's access to books. Because he said, well, we want people to have access to books. I said, what about the library? Yeah. You know, because it's used by so few people, really, in the community.
Yeah, people just don't use the library for books these days, do they?
No.
No.
So tell us about the other things that have come in into the library that would perhaps be part of the library service that maybe weren't there 20 years ago.
I think story times were always part of it. But I think libraries now try to do much more with baby rhyme time and children's story time and activities in the summer holiday, or any holidays really. They do the summer reading scheme. That's relatively new. And things like knit and natter and writing groups and all those things. Yeah. I always used to go round schools most of, you know, at the time I was a librarian, I would go around schools and try and encourage children to use the library or tell them what it was all about. And I'd have, Inter Caldecott's Porter Cabin Library, I'd have third year comprehensive classes come over for a social education lesson, and I'd tell them about the library and how to use it. And actually, a lot of them really enjoyed that, and they thought it was great to actually come in the library and use the catalogue and find what they wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, they really liked that.
Yeah.
And going round schools and nursery, reading them stories. And I went to one nursery, and she said, "Thank you so much for coming." And I said, "That's fine. You know, we're glad to let them know there's such a thing as libraries." And she said, "We're glad for them to know there's such a thing as books."
Yes.
And I thought, wow, because my children always had lots of books, and they've always been important to me, and I would always buy them books as birthday and Christmas presents. But not all homes do have books in, do they? And I guess that's even more true now.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the I know, I've used the facilities of myself in the library, the computer systems with a number of different programs, for example, for family history research and things like that. So, does the librarian get involved in managing that, selecting the sort of programs that go on there, or is that something that takes place at headquarters?
No, when I was there, we would discuss it as a library management team. And Sally and Kathy, who were job share information and IT officers, would advise about what they thought we could have, and we would all discuss it and decide what was to go on the computer. There's things like Ancestry, isn't there? Well, budget is used for us to pay to have Ancestry rather than a lot of the money on some of the books that we used to have, because really a lot of reference books were very expensive and you could only keep them for a year or 2 years because they were out of date. So you can't have directories. So if you've paid £500 for a directory that's only going to last a year, it's just as well to have a subscription to something anyway.
Yeah.
So computers, you know, and the internet and all of that, as they've developed,
has changed
all those sort of things, really. And lifelong learning, that was a new thing before I left. We were part of, what do they call it? It was an umbrella organisation. I've forgotten the name of it now. But it was to draw under one umbrella all the different organisations that were offering lifelong learning, and the library came under that umbrella because we were offering some sort of educational programme. As I say, both the names escape me, which I remember in bed tonight.
I'm dried up now.
Okay. Well, all I can say is that it's really been a privilege to hear you talking about...
Yes.
Your whole life.
Rambling all over the place.
Not at all. That's the way we think, you know. We move to and fro, don't we? And the richness of Caldecott as a town, actually. You've brought to life some aspects of the town which I didn't know about. I didn't know about the dances that took place in the school, college.
Different pop groups.
So, I mean, it does.
The church for me was very important. And I started going to the Methodist church when I was about eight. My mother went then, because she was Salvation Army originally, and that became the focal point of our social life, other than things like the dances. But there were lots of different concerts and parties and outings that all revolved around the church. And from the time I was eight until the time my husband retired, because by then I'd married the minister of the church, by the time he retired in 98 and we had to leave, that had been the focal point of my life, really, and all sorts of things.
I was going to say, being the wife of a Methodist minister comes with
Yes.
Responsibilities.
It does, yes. Joanna Trollope, one of the authors, she wrote The Rector's Wife and she wrote The Soldier's Wife. And I went to a talk that she gave in Chepstow Drill Hall, and she said she's fascinated by women who marry their husbands' jobs.
Yes.
And that, in a sense, is what you're doing. Because there are a lot of expectations for you, and living in a manse is like living in the office. You know, the phone didn't stop. I was only there for 6 years before Joe retired, so it wasn't quite the same for me.
So where is or was the manse?
Church Road, it's still
Church
there,
Road,
yes.
Yeah.
Reverend Anderson's
yeah.
there now,
yeah.
yes. Yes.
Do you have to organise ladies' groups and things like that?
No, I carried on working. I said to Joe, did he want me to give up work? And he said, no, they only pay me. They don't pay you. You've worked hard for where you've got. You carry on. So that was fine. But I did participate in every way that I could.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I mean, we'd have a Bible study in the house. He'd have wedding couples or people wanting christening, they'd come and he'd see them on a Thursday evening, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it was always a sort of office, really, or people just come to see him with their woes, or lots of people begging at the doors. In the end, that got so difficult that he put a sum of money in the police station, and if somebody came to ask for anything, he'd say, you go to the police station, tell them what you want and that Mr. Rooney sent you. I don't think many people actually did that. You don't know how much is fraud and how much is genuine.
No, no.
So that used to get quite difficult. But yeah, that was a big learning curve for me, something different altogether.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And when did you retire?
I retired in 2006, when I was 60. Yeah. I should have gone on for another 2 years to get my full pension, but I'm not a great computer fan, and once I had to start choosing, everything was on the computer. You chose books off the computer, everything was computer, and I didn't really like that. I missed not looking at the books and deciding which ones were best. It frustrated me when I'd chosen something off the computer and it really was not suitable for a library, it wasn't a suitable binding or whatever, you know. So that did put me off. It was, I think computers are wonderful, for you know, up to a certain point, but I didn't want to spend my whole life in front of one.
Yeah,
it didn't do me any good.
Yeah, thanks. That's I think that's
okay.
Good.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much.
Let's hope it's working.
I can't even switch it off now.
You'll be exhausted.
Oh, yes.